Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A new play on Broadway reimagines the final night in the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. King was assassinated, of course, on April 4th, 1968, on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, the day after he delivered one of his most famous speeches. We thought we would go into this because many of you have still never heard it, with about a minute of the real-life speech, popularly known by the title, I've Been to the Mountaintop, from April 3rd, 1968.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And anybody who hears that and realizes that on some level he seemed to prophesize his own death in the coming hours certainly gets goosebumps. So Katori Hall's new play, The Mountaintop, begins soon after that speech when King, played by Samuel L. Jackson, arrives back at his hotel room that night. Katori Hall is here, along with the director of the show, Kenny Leon. Kenny Leon is currently in rehearsals for another Broadway play, too, as you may know, Stick Fly by Lydia Diamond, which begins performances on November 18th. Katori, Kenny, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to be here.
Katori, first, congratulations on the success of the play.
Thank you.
It was a 2010 Olivier Award winner for Best New Play, a huge hit in London, and the Broadway production, which just opened October 13th, I understand, has already been extended through January 22nd.
Exactly. It's been an amazing ride.
And the play's only other character, the hotel maid Kameh, is played by Angela Bassett and is based on your mother, correct?
Yes. My mother lived around the corner from the Lorraine Motel. And so when Dr. King came to speak at Mason Temple, she really wanted to go hear him speak, and she had never been in the presence of his greatness. And unfortunately, you know, her mother was like, you need to stay your butt at home because they're going to bomb that church. So my mother didn't get to hear those words. I may not get there with you.
Prophecy herself.
Exactly. And the next day, you know, he was assassinated. And that was one of the biggest regrets of my mother's life. And so I heard the story, I think, when I was around 10 years old. And it just stuck inside of me. I kept on repeating it every time Black History Month rolled around. I'm like, yeah, my mother didn't get a chance to hear him. She never was there.
That personal connection to history.
That personal connection, exactly. And so I named the character Kameh after my mother.
And you were quoted in a New Yorker piece as saying of the King assassination, quote, Memphis has just never gotten past this moment in terms of race relations. There's always been the suspicion, because the Black community feels the true killer did not get caught. Mm-hmm. We feel like we should have taken better care of him, unquote. Does that mean people don't feel like James Earl Ray did it?
I think we look at it as there are more stories to be, you know, I guess, deconstructed. There's a lot of conspiracy theory going around Memphis. And, you know, growing up, you know, with parents who were extremely political, it just didn't seem like justice was done. And so, like, even till this day, a lot of people kind of unpick apart all the moments that happened before and then the moments that happened after. And a lot of things just don't add up.
And I gather when people visit the Lorraine Hotel as tourists, mm-hmm. there are some of these conspiracy theorists, if that's the term, standing outside on a regular basis, handing out literature?
Oh, no, not necessarily. necessarily. Not really. No, there's actually a woman named Jacqueline Smith who's actually been there for 23 years. I'm standing in front of the Lorraine Motel, and because she thinks that the Lorraine Motel should have been turned into a homeless shelter instead of a museum. I think that's like really the only person who like is out there picketing consistently.
But there are implications for Memphis today of having that 45-year-old history questioned.
Absolutely. I feel as though even today we're still very segregated, voluntarily, involuntarily. White and black people are still struggling to trust each other. And I think it has a lot to do with this major wound that happened on April 4th, 1968.
Kenny Leon, how do you work with a Samuel L. Jackson to do Martin Luther King? Are you trying to be completely realistic, or is there some artistic interpretation that you're trying to get to? How do you direct icon on icon?
Well, I think you have to go back to how do you work with Katori Hall. And my job as a director is to interpret what's on the page. And to many people, I always say the play is really not about MLK. MLK is just a metaphor, a vehicle that we tell this greater story that I've rephrased by saying it's about God's humor, God's grace, and God's look at us as imperfect human beings. So it's a bigger play, and Dr. King is just an example of a person that walked the planet and walked it in a really beautiful, wonderful way. And so we can learn a lot from all those things that he embraced. Samuel L. Jackson is just, you know, one of the country's greatest actors, you know, and he really takes he takes it serious. You know, if you look at all of his movies, he has, you know, he wears a wig, he changes his look because he came from the stage. He was trained for the stage, so he's always trying to figure out how to put himself in the body of the character he's playing. So I think he's did a good job of trying to find that personal, intimate side of Dr. King that, you know, the world doesn't know a lot about, so we're always trying to guess about it. So what he's done was try to find a sort of a specific internal speaking rhythm for him, and then found a way for him to be when he delivers his big, powerful speeches. And
if anybody has a quick question for Kenny Leon or Katori Hall from the mountaintop, we can take him if you get him in real quick. 212-433-WNYC. Anybody seen the show already? Want to say anything about it? 212-433-9692. Katori, there are several moments in the play where King refers to his frustration that more African Americans didn't come hear him speak that night and aren't participating more in the struggle. Why does he open up to Kamei about those frustrations? What role does she play for him?
I mean, she's definitely almost like a therapist, stand-in therapist at that moment of time. A lot of people don't know that last week of his life was fraught with a lot of frustration. He had come to Memphis exactly 1 week before to lead a sanitation worker strike march, and it descended into chaos. And so that's the reason why he came back. And, you know, one young man, Larry Payne, ended up dying, and that just stuck in his mind, and he knew that he had to come back to Memphis and do it right, make it a peaceful march. And so for him, it was just important for me to portray Dr. King at this moment in time where he was fraught with so many disappointments even and frustrations, and it just made for an amazing, you know, way to get deeper into his psychological landscape.
There's a little tension there too, because Kamei calls King a bougie Negro, and
the class issue. Yeah.
The class issue comes up. Mm-hmm. So what did that represent from real life?
Well, it's interesting. Particularly at that moment in time, I felt as though, you know, people felt that the movement needed to be led by people who were, you know, middle class black, people who were looked at as the good Negro. But the thing is, the working class community, they were the people who made the movement. They were the people who walked the streets, who, you know, participated in the marches. And there was just, you know, a little class divide that exists within the black community, and it still exists today. But I feel as though for Dr. King, he was trying to close that gap. He actually had moved to Chicago and lived in the slums, and a lot of people don't even know that.
Kenny Leon, you're now in rehearsals for another Broadway play, Stick Fly by Lydia R. Diamond. And that's a comedy about an upper-class African-American family starring Dulé Hill and Tracy Toms, among others, and also partly deals with class. Is there something about class in the present-day African-American experience that's, you know, that you're dealing with through Stick Fly and The Mountaintop?
Well, I think it's always there, and I think when you're doing stories on the Great White Way, I think it's a blessing to be able to do a diverse body of work, you know, and so to have Katori Hall to write about this class issue and this story, and then have Lydia Diamond to write about upper class, I think is exciting for Broadway to hear hear those stories. And so many times we don't hear from this class that Lydia is writing about.
And by the way, Kenny, why you? You're directing two plays on
why
Broadway
not him?
This season. You directed the final two Broadway premieres of August Wilson's 10-play cycle, Gem of the Ocean and Radio Golf. Is there a dearth of directors, of African-American directors, or are you just that good?
No, well, I think it's a combination of all of that. But I think that the questions, these probably questions don't come up to Dan Sullivan or Doug Hughes or non-African-American directors.
They also and so they do multiple?
They do multiple shows all
the
time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing and a beautiful thing. And I don't get enough work. I could probably do, you know, two more Broadway plays this season. So, but I also think that we should make opportunity for other African-Americans to direct as well. I think there are many great directors around the country that don't get an opportunity to direct on the highest stage. So it's a little bit of both.
Edward in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen the play, and I enjoyed the second half immensely, a little taken at the beginning of the play. But my question, and it's not my question, but what I've heard from the general audience, public, that is to say, that there seems to be a question of whether there's an insulting attitude about this play, an expose attitude about this play, a deconstruction of Martin Luther King. How do you answer that question?
Was that your impression?
It was not absolutely. A little bit, like I said, the first half. The second half I thought was magnificent, mm-hmm. but I did get a little bit.
No spoilers now.
Please don't spoil them.
But I did get a little bit of questions about the appropriateness and the timing.
Katori, go ahead, Kenny.
I'll jump in because my mother is a very religious woman, and she also was a great follower of Dr. King. And she reminded me when I was in Tech Week for this play. She said, "Just think about David in the Bible, and all the things that were imperfect about David, and that was God's right hand man." So I always, what I think, Katori has done a great job is of humanizing Dr. King, and at the same time uplifting all those things that made him great. And you can't have the end unless you have the beginning.
And Katori, was that part of your goal, to humanize him, which means showing him warts and all?
Well, absolutely, and it's based in a lot of historical fact. Like, some people were concerned that I showed Dr. King smoking, but a lot of people don't know that at the end of his life, he was smoking quite heavily because he was so frustrated. At the National Civil Rights Museum, they've recreated the room, and all the ashtrays that they've put in to recreate the room are full of cigarette butts. And there's a documentary where Reverend Billy Kiles is talking about how he actually took a crushed cigarette out of Dr. King's hand. So these little things that are absolutely true were interwoven into the play and allowed me to, you know, create a very human warts and all portrayal of Dr. King, because he was a man. He was a great man, but he was a man.
Stacy in Belle Meade, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. I had the opportunity to see the play, and I just wanted to say how wonderful I think it was in general. I think that it was a great representation of kind of past and present, and that's where my question comes from. Katori, in the play, the second half, you include a scene about the kind of Dr. King looking into the future. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what inspired that and what you were trying to get across, because I really thought there was something significant about thinking about Dr. King in this present age where we have President Obama mm-hmm. and all of the so-called progress. And so I just wanted to know what made you include that in the play.
Well, one of my favorite quotes of Dr. King is, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And so for me, I look at, you know, he was killed in 1968, and then I move forward to my now, my present, and I look at just the flip-flop nature of progress in America. And I just felt like it was so important to allow an audience to go through that journey with him, and for him to see that, you know, sometimes things are going to be light and sometimes things are going to be dark, but there is progress being made, even though there is always work to do. And for me, it was almost like giving the character of Dr. King a small gift to see that his work was not all for naught. in the play. And at the end, you know, we see him looking over and he's standing on the mountaintop. And it's very important, I think, for the audience to have that bit of closure.
Stacy, thank you. We just have a minute. Have either of you been to the King Memorial? The coincidence of the play and the memorial opening at about the same time? Of course, there have been, you know, detractors and proponents. Have you been down there, Kenny?
No, we were set to go at the original date.
Yeah.
Because we had that day off, and then I've been working every day since then.
It got delayed by the hurricane.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Hurricane Irene messed us up. And I have a plan to go down in a couple of weeks. I've just been working hard as well on another show.
Don, I was hoping to get your views on the record. Well, we thank Katori Hall, playwright, and Kenny Leon, director of The Mountaintop, currently running on Broadway now through at least January 22nd. Congratulations. Good luck. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.